Connect the Dots with Allison Rose Levy, Saturdays at noon Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
So now I'm delighted to be able to bring in our guests for today's Connect the Dots show. I'm talking with Josh and Rebecca Tickell, and they are the filmmakers who've made this amazing film, The Big Fix, and we're going to be talking about that today. It's actually been playing all throughout this week in New York City and getting more and more interest and buzz. They've been using the film to raise awareness about a host of environmental and health issues, and as people on this show know, I regularly, all too regularly perhaps for some of you, bring on people who are experts in talking about the dangers of fracking in terms of toxic chemical exposure. So this is really a cautionary tale because their film, The Big Fix, is about what happens and what is happening, what's ongoing down in New Orleans in the whole Gulf Coast region in the wake of the Deepwater Horizon 2010 accident. Even though it's passed from the headlines, it still is happening in reality, and The Big Fix is about that, and they have a tale to tell. So welcome, Josh and Rebecca. So nice to have you here on Connect the Dots.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
Yeah. So tell our listeners what motivated you to make this film. Like, how did that happen?
Well, I originally grew up in Louisiana, and Rebecca and I were actually married in January of 2010. So right after we got married, this disaster occurred. And Rebecca said, well, listen, we've got to go down to Louisiana and raise awareness for green energy. We should do a march, you know, get people involved in green energy. And I said, well, honey, it's a bit of an oil town. I don't know how they're going to really respond to that. But she said, look, we should go. And so we went. And Rebecca called Peter Fonda, who had been very fond of our first film, Fuel, and Amy Smart and Jason Mraz, and we gathered sort of our celebrity friends and went down to New Orleans. Of course, the march was surprisingly well received, but what we found, which shocked all of us and which none of us expected, was when we went down to the beach, there was oil under the sand, and there were machines literally plowing sand over the oil. So people talk about a cover-up. This was a literal, not a figurative, a literal cover-up of the oil spill. And we said, well, if we don't expose this story, if we don't begin to film this, it's likely that the truth will never be told because the media is not looking. They're not seeing what we're seeing. And that began a two-year journey, which lands us here today. Almost 2 years, not quite. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So acquaint our listeners a little bit with the story that The Big Fix has to tell.
Well, it starts off with us going down to Louisiana. It tells a little bit of Josh's history, having grown up in Louisiana, being indoctrinated by the oil companies and their sort of propaganda in the educational system down there. And it really picks up where our first film, Fuel, left off. We made a film that won the Sundance Film Festival in 2008 called Fuel. And that really tells the story of oil, Josh's history with oil, his mom getting sick from growing up in Cancer Alley, surrounded by 150 petrochemical facilities, and Josh jump-starting the biodiesel movement in the United States over a decade ago. So we went down to the Gulf, like Josh said, and amazingly, the March for Clean Energy was well-received, but when we got down to the beaches and we saw what was not being reported in the news and what was really happening, we started to investigate further. So we started pushing the boundaries. Even though we were being told, don't go here, don't film here, don't wear those respirators, we continued to push. We went in undercover. We went in at night. We filmed BP workers saying things that they really shouldn't be saying. And ultimately, our investigation took us all the way to D.C. to the very top. And what we found out was there was a major cover-up to make the media, to make the public, to make people believe that it was safe in the Gulf when in fact, it wasn't. We've been told that the fish is fine. We've been told that the oil is gone. We've been told that the oil is not leaking, and none of those things are true. And that's what we unveil in The Big Fix.
So the oil is still leaking?
This is perhaps one of the most disturbing parts of the cover-up, is that it's ongoing. There is an oil slick above the Macondo well site currently. There is oil lapping up on the beaches of Louisiana currently, and there's still oil in the marsh. And, of course, now BP, with the added pressure, the big fix, the movie has driven home. You know, the movie was reviewed in the New York Times yesterday. A huge top of C-16, a fourth of the page, was devoted to not whether it was a good or bad movie. It was devoted to the story that the film tells, which is a true story. With all of this pressure, internationally, the film has been covered from France, where it appeared in Cannes, all the way to here. BP's feeling the pressure. BP is now taking the approach that these are natural seeps that are occurring. The ocean floor is somehow seeping oil around the Macondo well site. But if you look at the pre-drill report, which was required under MMS, the geological survey of the area, the drill report, all of that data is in fact intact and it's available. In no way is there any mention of any natural seep in that area. So the geologists who are working on this issue, who haven't been paid off by BP, are theorizing that what occurred during the process of the blowout of the well, the lowering, remember, of a 20-ton, 8-story dome on top of the well to try and control it, which of course failed. You've got to imagine there's a tremendous amount of pressure on a very delicate sandstone structure. They theorize now that there are actually fissures in the sandstone, and through those fissures the oil is escaping, which means it's not something we can fix, and this will be ongoing until the well exhausts, which could be very well for the rest of our lives. The chemical structure, the chemical fingerprint, every oil well in the world has its own chemical fingerprint. The oil has been fingerprinted by 8 separate institutions. We know that what's coming ashore, we know that what's on the surface of the water in the Gulf of Mexico is absolutely, definitively, definitely from the Macondo well site. So it is still leaking. And that is perhaps the most disturbing initial thing that we learn in the big fix. But what we go on to learn is that in order to keep that from the public, there are measures taking place right now that potentially endanger the lives of 400,000 people along the Gulf. And specifically, I'm talking about the continued use of Corexit, a chemical that's known to be a neurotoxin. It's known to be a hemolytic. It breaks apart red blood cells. We see sickness throughout the Gulf. We see people dropping dead who have been sprayed with this substance. This is an extremely serious health risk because it is in the seafood. And remember, Louisiana exports 30% of the nation's seafood to the rest of the country. You don't think you're eating fish from Louisiana? Well, how many of the people listening to this radio broadcast eat chicken? The bad news is the fish that feeds the majority of the protein for our nation's chicken comes from the Gulf of Mexico.
That is very bad news indeed.
Yeah, so it's endemic. It's very serious.
And it becomes more toxic as it goes up the food chain, which is even more concerning.
And to us.
Yes.
Since we're just meeting as we do this show, I know I haven't told you, but I was the first person to write about the potential dangers of Corexit on the Huffington Post. When they began using it, it was like, oh, hooray, now we have a panacea, story over, we're done, blah, blah, blah. And I, being a 25-year health journalist, Green in Health, began reading the label ingredients. And there are several different kinds of Corexit. And when you start taking a hard look at the ingredients, it's not very thrilling. I did a piece called, and of course, at the time, the company producing it said, oh, the ingredients, it's just like what's in your soap. Mm-hmm. And it's like, in terms of home personal care products, we're looking, at certain ingredients. But this was way, way beyond that. And we've heard the same kind of story with the gas drilling, the contamination of the chemicals, the methane shows up in people's home water systems, and they say something like, oh, it's your laundry detergent.
Mm-hmm. They told us it was less toxic than salad dressing, actually, when we were interviewing toxicologists down in the Gulf. And, I have firsthand experience with this, not intentionally, but just simply by going down there with Josh and filming the story. I became a part of the story, I was exposed to the oil and the dispersants. And despite countless people telling us that we should not be wearing respirators and telling us, in fact, yelling at us to take off the respirators, Josh insisted that we wear respirators, and thank goodness we did.
It offended people that you were wearing a respirator
because
yes. that broke through their denial about the fact that something toxic
yes.
was going on.
They didn't
here.
Want us to make people afraid, and they certainly didn't want us taking photos wearing respirators because they didn't want people to see that happening down there. But I ended up getting sick from being exposed to the oil and dispersant. First, the skin on my feet started peeling off. Then I had this crazy rash on my skin and my neck and chest where the respirator wasn't covering my skin. Then I started having blood in my urine. I had 13 upper respiratory infections within a very short period of time and what many doctors thought was chemical pneumonia. And then doctors diagnosed me with an irreversible skin condition where they say for the rest of my life I can't expose the skin on my neck and chest to the sun. And finally, just a few weeks ago, in another follow-up with a toxicologist, she told me that I should not be having children, that most of the women down in the Gulf who were exposed in the same way that I was are not able to have kids. They're miscarrying their children. And if they are born, they're being malformed, much like what happened in Vietnam after we sprayed Agent Orange.
Oh, that is just incredible. I mean, I'm so sorry. This is such a tragic thing. And yet, you know, it's the same thing that's happening where we're having animals dying. Now, you know, it's like it's happening all across the place.
Mm-hmm.
So we hear a PR term. It's like what's in your soap, it's in your laundry detergent, it's in your salad dressing. And then, you know, we want to move on and not get concerned and upset.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is the reality. And there you are because you're investigative journalists.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just in the same way, and then you go down to be in solidarity with, you know, the community that you, Josh, come from. And this is you know, the sort of the tragic result. Well, I salute your courage and your strength.
Thank you.
I think our listeners and all, you know, and all who you pass this along to, listeners, really, you know, we need to all show courage in such a time. So it's not just a few people who take the lead and are pioneers in showing courage. But, I mean, I think really in solidarity, everyone really needs to be more courageous about facing up to some of this thing. And because it disappeared from the headline and it disappeared from the media coverage doesn't mean it disappeared from reality. And this is still going on. Now, I can tell you personally, I want to talk a little bit about the health effects and the food effects, because that means that, you know, everyone is kind of like always there's a thought of, well, it's not in my backyard, it's not happening here. I have to tell you, I haven't seen, personally, and I was a fish eater, I haven't eaten fish since the incident, because having been in the media for 2 decades, I know how these kinds of stories easily get covered up, and I know that, you know, the fish here, there, and everywhere didn't spring up from, you know, the grocery store. It came from somewhere. And so even as, and I've been in the integrative health field for over 20 years, even as a host of doctors are saying, oh, it's so healthy, omega-3s, I was just at a, you know, which are in fish and have been recommended for their health properties. I was at a health conference 2 weeks ago, and very well-known doctors were still making this recommendation. It's kind of like, you know, health, this is part of my beat in this show. Health recommendations don't exist in isolation. Food didn't pop up in the grocery store. It comes from places. It comes from planet Earth. If we do this kind of thing, you know, it will affect the food supply, and that food is not safe. And that means that you do not have to be as courageous as you are walking with respirators down, you know, along the afflicted area to be exposed. And it's something that everyone should be mindful about and concerned about.
Yeah. And, you know, you can get those omega-3s without eating fish oil. The omega-3 doesn't actually come from the fish. It comes from the algae that the fish eats.
That's
so
right.
You can get those same omega-3s. That's what I'm doing, what Josh and I are doing, from an algae supplement versus from a fish supplement.
That's right. That's right. Exactly
yeah.
right. I mean, for now.
Right.
Yeah.
Until we do something else,
right.
you know,
well,
with radiation or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, we're limiting our food supply and options.
Mm.
And so, and our life sources through these progressive incidents, one after another. And it's really, it's not something to tune out on for anyone, even if, you know, whatever the one is that you're concerned about, these are all going on simultaneously. It's something we really ought to all be aware of.
Yeah, and people, you know, it's interesting. I was very much involved in the biodiesel movement, promoting biodiesel, and people got very concerned about food versus fuel. But this, now we have a international issue. We are literally trading petroleum for food.
And
we will now not be able to eat from the Gulf of Mexico safely for our lifetimes, at the very least. We know that between 2 and 40 million gallons of Caraxit were sprayed undersea and sprayed on top of the Gulf of Mexico itself. That's never been done before. This is the largest science experiment that creates... See, what Caraxit does, which is so insidious, oil and water don't mix.
Right.
They separate. So Caraxit has a hydrophilic and a lipophilic end, meaning it attracts water and it attracts fat or oil. So it attaches that oil to the water. It disperses the oil through the water column. And this is going on today. We have evidence to show that they've been spraying Caraxit up until very recently, if not still today. Of course they are, because if it's still leaking, how do they hide that much oil? Well, with Caraxit. So here we are spraying this substance, which attaches oil to water throughout the column of water. It also attaches it to natural species. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing dolphins, full-grown dolphins, mm-hmm. mother dolphins, with bottlenose on their bottlenoses, bringing the babies up to docks as if to say, please help. Mm-hmm. We've seen hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of baby dolphins wash ashore. Mm-hmm. The oil spill occurred approximately during the first trimester of their mother's pregnancy. Well, dolphins are mammals just like us. They're red-blooded. So what does it tell you if the dolphin population is collapsing? We have reports of fishermen who have seen dolphins rubbing themselves up against their nets. And when they go to investigate, look at the dolphins, what's going on, the dolphins are white. They have rubbed the skin off of their bodies because the Caraxit is so... It stings your skin. You can feel it. It's like a burning sensation. So these animals, beings, are in the same water. Well, it's in the air. So it's in the Gulf Stream. It's in the water that people are drinking, and it's in the rain. We have definitive proof that shows that Caraxit easily travels with the oil. Again, hydrophilic, it is attracted to the water, it's evaporating into the clouds and raining down on people. Well, that's not just in the Gulf of Mexico. Rain clouds travel across the United States, so we're seeing this up and down the East Coast. This is an example of how far we're willing to go to make sure that we can still drive our cars on petroleum. You want to talk about food versus fuel. It's time to begin to talk about petroleum versus life, fracking versus life, tar sands versus life, and ultimately nuclear versus life. You know, Congressman Nadler is working very hard to make sure that we have some restrictions on our nuclear power facilities as well as dispersants. It's all in the same effort he's doing. But if you look at what's happening in Fukushima, Three of the reactors have completely melted down. Well, if you go to a sushi restaurant, you say, well, I'd like some tuna, for instance. You have to be psychic to know that that tuna is not either from the deep Gulf of Mexico or from close to Japan. There is fish coming across the border into the United States that's hot, it's radioactive, they're not testing for it. Same thing from the Gulf of Mexico. So we're literally now segregating which portions of the population are going to survive because we're so incredibly addicted to petroleum. And the ultimate message of the big fix is this is a rigged game. The government's in on it. The banks are unfortunately in on it. The oil companies are certainly in on it. The pharmaceutical companies are in on it. They'd love to sell you some more products to try and take care of all of these ailments which are going to occur resulting from your oil use. And you're feeling a little bit trapped because the system itself is designed to take the spoils and leave you, the consumer, not the citizen, but the consumer, with nothing.
Can I just interject here?
Please.
The pharmaceutical companies are also, feeding a lot of people a lot of antidepressants and mm-hmm. anti-ADD medications and statins and a whole host of other things, most of which really don't work for the largest majority of the intended ailments. talking about a fix. But what they do is that they kind of sedate and numbify the population. So, you know, of course it is upsetting. It is depressing. Better to cry and scream and rage and get angry and feel sorrow and mourn and all the rest of it than to numb out the emotions, because which is what many people do. It's like, this is too much. I can't handle this. Oh, it's too much information. I wish it wasn't happening, so I'll just tune it out.
Sure.
And unfortunately, that's not the solution.
Yeah, Percocet is not going to solve the Gulf oil spill. As much as we wish it would actually physically make reality different, it just makes it different in your head. And I think that's part of the cultural trance. We see people very much entranced. You know, BP, after the Big Fix came out, now we know it's premiered in Los Angeles, New Orleans, and France, and now here in New York. BP had just announced, good news, everyone, they're commissioning their own film to tell the truth about the Gulf oil spill, and they're using the same company that's been filming all their little segments, which you see on the internet, which when they hire a shrimper and they hire a restaurant owner who are both out of work, and they give them a couple of days' work to be in a commercial. So the good news is you're finally going to learn the truth from BP after all this time. Watch for it, you know, the BP-sponsored truth.
And actually, if you go to watch the Big Fix trailer on YouTube, up in the right-hand corner where they have the sponsored ads, of course, what do you see? We made it right, BP. So the very first thing you see when you look up our trailer or when you pull up the New York Times ad article, for instance, online, it's an ad for an oil company. So they're very eager to tell you how the oil is gone.
Yeah,
and
keep
filling up on our gasoline. It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine that the New York Times reviewed the movie, but look at this big shiny ad next to the review for, you know, oil company.
Well, you know, actually, we're going to have to take a break and come back for the second half of our show for station identification. But that's a very, very good point. It's really in our time. You know, we just take for granted that there are all these ads and that, you know, so you're supposed to be able to go, this is truth. This is an ad. This is marketing. This is reality. This is news. But, you know, it's gotten pretty mixed up. And a lot of people, understandably, are confused where truth lies, which side is up and which side is down. So, you know, that's what we do here on Connect the Dots. You know, we try to really connect some of these things for people. And this is really, I mean, this is horrifying news, but it's news we need to hear. So we're going to come back to our conversation with Josh and Rebecca Tickell, and they're the filmmakers of The Big Fix, which you've been hearing about in the next segment of Connect the Dots. Stay with us, listeners. Welcome back, listeners, to the second half of Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy. I report on the Huffington Post, and I host this program here every Saturday at noon Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. My guests on today's show, we've been talking about the film The Big Fix, and my guests are the filmmakers Josh and Rebecca Tickell. I just want to give you some information so you can track down this film, see it, tell people about it, join in the conversation about it. The website for the film is The Big FixMovie.com. There's also a very active Facebook page on The Big Fix, which you can participate in. You know, because this is an ongoing event, the film is kind of a wake-up call. It's an opportunity to become better informed. But it's not, you know, one of the things is that in media nowadays, there's just such a barrage of information that, well, there's this and there's that and we can't handle it. And all of these things are ongoing. Many of them are. Unfortunately, Fukushima is also ongoing and many other things. And they're all interactive in different ways. And that's why Connect the Dots is about, you know, kind of how to hold a bigger frame around the interaction. The thing is, it's better to get together in community on Facebook and social media and participate and take action. And I'm sure that you'll be making people aware of actions, you know, than it is to just kind of go off on your own and isolate about it. So, you know, that's what we encourage people to do in the show. And please do also, as I ask you guys to do every week, sign up for my website where I have an e-zine that goes out every Saturday to tell you who's coming up on the show. You can go to healthjournalistblog.com. I also link to my Huffington blogs, and I link to actions. And I hope you guys will also keep me informed of actions that we can do around the Gulf and health and food, because this is really a matter of important concern, you know, for everybody. Now, you know, with what you're, in the last segment we were talking about, you know, the tremendous impact on food. And, you know, even people I know that are very, you know, they're not kind of like, oh, that's woo-woo, that's a conspiracy. In other words, if something's going on, then we right away put a media label on it. Woo, it's a conspiracy. What does that mean? It means I'm afraid and I don't want to pick up the rug and look at this. Even if we have data, even if it's documented, even if, as in the film, experts tell us, woo, we'll call it a conspiracy. You know, rather than look at something that's really unpleasant because it means I can't go and eat sushi anymore. And I'm in the habit. I had that convenience. Wow, what's going on here? You know, the rain clouds, Josh, that you mentioned, you know, that pick up all of this gawk and come sailing along, they travel up the East Coast. I'm concerned about that. I can stop eating fish, and I did. But, you know, although I ate some wild Alaskan salmon, well, last March, the Fukushima incident put an end to that. That was goodbye to fish at that point for me. So I can make, and I talk about this a lot, I can make, because we are all individuals and we can make personal health choices. You know, I made that personal health choice. What am I supposed to do when, and we know the hurricane patterns come right up from the Gulf of Mexico through Florida, North Carolina, right up the East Coast with all this stuff. Now, can I control that? What am I going to get? Magic umbrellas to do it? You know, the only, really, so this is not something that just affects the poor old people down in New Orleans, although I'd like to hear more about what they're experiencing. It affects all of us. So what are the people in the Gulf communities experiencing with this going on in their food, in their land, in their air, in their water? What's going on with them and their health?
Well, truthfully, the people in the Gulf are experiencing isolation.
You know, they see this as the rest of the country has forgotten about them. The CDC is not interested in what's happening. The EPA visiting, you know, Louisiana has certified everything's fine. We've got the Coast Guard and NOAA both saying, oh, it's fine, no problem, no problem here. So from their perspective, they have been left out to dry. And from many of their perspective, they've just been left to die. And they see themselves as disposable people in a process needed to fuel the cities. You know, if this same thing had happened, let's be honest, if this oil spill had happened in the Hudson River off of, you know, New York City, with the spraying of dispersants over Manhattan and people were dropping dead because they had a hemolytic, you know, blood condition that was undiagnosable by, you know, the CDC because it's not a disease. No, it's from a chemical dispersant. It is just like Agent Orange. There would have been massive riots here in New York City.
Well, I beg to differ because, you know, I broke the story on fracking, hydraulic fracturing in New York, and, you know, for 2+3 years now, you know, we've been basically saying to the people here in the city, and I'm a native New Yorker, hello, it happened in Pennsylvania, that's your neighboring state, here's what happened, and now they want to bring it to upstate where, one, your water comes from. Two, your food comes from there. Three, the air that helps keep the city clear of pollution, they all come from up there. And so this is going to have a huge impact. Fracking has been done in the, you know, Southwest and other remote regions of the country. It's the first time it's really being done upstream from major urban populations, and it is extremely difficult for people to believe that it's happening as they're not exempt. I mean, there has been more and more outcry, more people getting together, yeah. But, you know, it takes a lot of awareness building.
Yeah.
So tell us.
I stand corrected. I think, to your point, Allison, we are so indoctrinated. Yeah. The cultural trance is so strong. You know, as long as I can get my latte and my iPhone, you know, can watch, you know, reruns of Dancing with the Stars, what do I care if people in New Orleans are dying? I mean, let's be honest, you know. Are they going to come for me in New York? No, I'm safe in New York. So that sense, that overwhelming sense of security, and then we've got this sort of strong patriarchal government where we elected the hero, and certainly he's going to take care of us, and he'd never let anything bad happen to me. I'm not even sure that President Obama understands or knows what's going on, or that he's even allowed to know what's going on. We have really entranced ourselves into a situation where we are so incredibly vulnerable as a population, and we have literally taken ourselves out of the driver's seat. So, you know, the big fix is in. We've become addicted to a system which is fixed, it's rigged. And unless we begin to make some really progressive choices, you said, what are the actions? What are the actions? Well, we still have a functioning EPA. One of the actions is don't let the little bit of an environmental protection agency we have, don't let that be gutted by Congress, right, which is, you know, on the table. Support the few Congress people who are trying to do something, like Congressman Nadler with the dispersants bill and the radioactive bill, and begin to, you know, really the ultimate lesson is we've got to shift where our money goes. We've got to shift where the investment on Wall Street is going. There is a major green tech economy happening around the world. There's $14 trillion sitting on the side of the U.S. economy that won't invest because we can't create a stable market because we're invested in oil and pharmaceuticals. Well, that's profit that's available to the American people. It's a radical idea, but what if we began to invest, put our money where our mouths are? If we want sustainability, if we want health, if we want clean air, if we want clean water, if we want actually something to hand to the next generation, why don't we invest in that and reap the benefits from it? Because green tech is going to be the only economic driver in the new economy. So it really is time not just to look at the health impacts. We're all going to feel that. Mm-hmm. It's time not just to look at the environmental impacts. We're seeing that across the country. It's time to look at how are we going to fuel the next generation, and how are we going to sustain ourselves? Because if you think big oil is going to take care of you when the dollar slides again and again and again, and maybe the euro is a little stronger, or maybe the yen or yuan in China is a little stronger, the oil will go where the money is. They're not going to take care of you. The only thing that's going to take care of you is domestic green technology that's based here in America.
And, you know, I bet a lot of people listening to this right now are actually sitting in their car with their engine running, right, burning, guess what? Gasoline. And interestingly, I mean, much of what we just talked about was how we'll wait until the very last minute before we'll take action. I mean, even though people are aware that there's fracking going on and that it could affect their health, even though we were down in the Gulf and we were literally seeing people with blood coming out of their ears, there was this sense of denial. We want to believe that our government will protect us. We want to believe that the EPA is doing its job and that everything is fine and that we can just keep on burning that fuel, keep our cars running, and go on with the status quo. The problem is it takes sometimes, like what happened to me, really getting that personal impact, me having blood in my urine, for me to really realize, you know what, the government's not going to save us. The EPA is not going to save us. In fact, the only person that can really change this right now, right here today, is me. And I think we all have to have that realization before it's too late. And that's really what the big fix shows. We have our back up against the wall, and we don't realize it. And, you know, until we start shifting the way that our politicians are funded, they're going to continue to tell us that everything is okay. And that also is what we unveil in the big fix. We go to D.C., we talk to several Congress people, and they basically told us flat out on camera, we cannot vote against the people that fund our careers. They are the ones that give us the money. They're the ones that finance our campaigns. And if we turn against them as an elected official, we will not get reelected. And 9 out of the 10 largest corporations on this planet are oil companies. So who is it that owns our government? They're supposed to represent us. But the fact is, the way that they see it, I'm not even making this up. This is from their own lips. They're run and owned by the corporations. So until we, and this is one of the things I love actually about Occupy. One of the things that they're standing up for is changing the law so that the corporation is not considered an individual. Because as long as they're considered an individual, they can make donations and nobody has to know where that's coming from. Nobody has to realize that these corporations own our politicians. And that's something that's got to change.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's part of the fight we're seeing here in New York. We have a newly elected governor. He has presidential ambitions. I'm just going to leave, you know, I won't connect the dots right now on that one, listeners. I'm just going to go dot, dot, dot. And he's pushing fracking on the state. So what does all that add up to if you look at it? Don't make me say it. Reach for it. You know, so and here.
Yeah, who's, you know, follow the money. Who's, yeah, you know, who's Cuomo in bed with? Where's the money going? Let's be honest. You know, this is a very simple equation. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out why he's pushing fracking. There's a lot of money to be made. We're talking billions in a very short period of time.
We've got to empower ourselves. You know, true power to the people is when we generate our own power. One of the things that Josh did that so inspired me over a decade ago was he showed people they could make their own fuel. We do not have to be slaves to oil. We can get off of oil. And, you know, while what we're saying is really bad news in a way, it's also brilliant because it's a wake-up call. We can do something about this. You know, we cannot wait for our government to step in and save us because, you know what? It ain't going to happen. We've got to be the ones to take our power back. We've got to be the ones to take our money and use that as our vote, because if we're spending all of our money on oil and gasoline, who do you think is going to continue to make sure that the system stays the same? It's not going to work. We've got to look at all the different things that we can do to get off of oil right now today. That means energy efficiency. That means alternative fuels. We should give ethanol a second look. You know, we as environmentalists have been made to believe that it's bad for the environment, that it takes food off of people's plates. And let me tell you, that is not true. We did another investigation about ethanol. Ethanol is a perfect solution when done sustainably, and we can do that. But we just have to open our minds and dig a little bit deeper than what the mainstream media is telling us.
Yeah, like, you know, what you're describing is a real picture of the steps that we have to open our minds and think about to attain true independence. To call all of this stuff saying, oh, we're going to get energy independence from an addiction to the same thing you were dependent on to begin with. You know, it's like, it's like opening the screen door but locking the door to the house. You're still not getting out, even right, though the house is on fire.
Yeah.
You know, so I all of what you say makes sense. And also, you know, like, basically, it's kind of like, you know, the story of the guy that walked down the road with a hole in the middle of the street, and he kept falling into it until he learned his lesson. He walked around it, and then finally he didn't even go down that block. And we keep being hit over the head. These things are, you know, the accident in the Gulf, you know, the fracking, the tar sands, they're the same message over and over and over. And the ultimate message is weather change, of course, and then it's out of our hands. Mm. So
yeah, welcome to hurricanes in New York City.
Exactly.
Are you guys ready for, you know, one of those every month? Yeah. That's insane.
Yeah, well,
it's
we've had them.
Science fiction. It's like we're living in the Twilight Zone.
It's a happening thing. it's a happening thing. And, you know, so it's kind of like, so how soon will we wake up? Already we've been snoring through a whole lot that's happening, and the unconsciousness about all of these incidents typifies that. But, you know, the thing about wake-up calls is they don't get easier.
Mm.
They get harder and harder and worse and worse and worse. So the smartest thing is to learn the lesson, you know, if you can, when someone else is suffering, rather than saying it's not happening to me, it's happening to him, and now I'm going to go over here and do yoga and be spiritual. You know, I'm sorry, that doesn't cut it, in my opinion.
Yeah, we have to take real actions. We can't just sit around and hold hands and sing kumbaya and expect that the problem is going to go away.
Where should people go? Like, how can they connect for, you know, the right information? Will that be available on the film website? Are you going to have a community on your Facebook page? Where do you like to send people? Where should they go for action?
We're definitely encouraging people to go to Facebook and to mm-hmm. begin the dialogue there, because mm-hmm. we have so many resources that are coming in and people who are knowledgeable. We have EPA officials who are now on our side who are chiming
right.
into the Facebook page and saying, well, you know, look, we're trying and here's the truth. We have people from all over the world that are actually coming online and telling the truth. So that's a really great community. We will be developing the BigFix.com website.
BigFixMovie.com.
BigFixMovie.com. Thank you for correcting me. And we are working toward April 19th next year, a national one-night in-theater release of the movie with a panel after the film live that will update people on what's really still going on in the Gulf and what they can do now in their own communities.
Mm-hmm. That sounds really great. You know, and I am so behind this because, you know, as a New Yorker, because if we learn this lesson, we don't have to have New York being the next lesson. It's mm-hmm. kind of, these lessons are not different lessons. The chemicals, the illnesses, the food contamination, the animal deaths, the water contamination, it's all the same story wherever we look. So, you know, I want people to get this message because the sooner we get it, the better. And the better it is for the next generation, you know, too.
Yeah.
And we're all working on their behalf, whether we have children or, like me, we don't. We have cats. So,
and, you know, New York has already been greatly affected. I mean,
yes.
If you look at our actions in the Middle East as a country, what we have done to make sure that that energy supply, that that oil supply doesn't stop, not made us, you know, very popular in some parts of the world. And I think, you know, with what happened with the World Trade Center, I mean, that's a perfect example of another way in which we're all affected by this. You know, until we have an agreement collectively that we are going to get off of oil right now, we're going to continue to see what we saw with Deepwater Horizon spill, with September 11th, and the fracking issue that's going on right now in New York.
The tar sands, we've got the Athabasca tar sands. So we've got, you know, if you start to make a map of the United States and you're like, well, there's radiation off the coast of California from Fukushima. You've got the tar sands in Canada. That's the north coming down. That's completely polluting the waterways and the rain. Once again, we've got the Gulf of Mexico, sixth largest body of water in the world. And, you know, the East Coast is now completely, you know, insecure. We've got this incredible threat. Where is that coming from? Somehow connected with oil. How far are we willing to push it toward this sort of post-apocalyptic tomorrow? Before we go, geez, man, maybe the oil isn't the way to go. I mean, really, you know, how far is humankind willing to go? I think that's the ultimate question, is really, when is our survival instinct going to kick in? How stupid are we such that we're going to literally have to get down to the instinct of, we've got to stop it, otherwise we're going to die as a species?
That's it. At the DEC hearing we had last week, the people were talking back to the state officials, and they said, how many of us have to die? And you know what, folks? We're down to our last minutes here, but I think that really is the question. Get off those antidepressants. Get out your hanky. Cry. Get angry. Hold hands. Join in. Go to the BigFixMovie.com website and participate. Let's, you know...
And get off of oil.
Get off of oil. Let's all do it together. We can. So I want to thank you. It's been a total pleasure having you on Connect the Dots, Josh and Rebecca Tickell, in your great film, The Big Fix.
Thank you.
Everyone to see it. You can find out where, thebigfixmovie.com. And we'll look forward to the April launch. Maybe we'll catch up with you again then. Thank you so much for being with me today on Connect the Dots.
Thank you, Allison. Us. Thanks to your listeners here in New York.
And listeners, tune in next week for Connect the Dots, Saturday, every Saturday, noon Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm Allison Rose Levy.